Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone, where there is always more than one way to Mormon. I'm Stephen Carter, and I'll be introducing this week's episode. But first, I want to remind you that the 2022 Sunstone Summer Symposium is coming right up. It's actually the last weekend of July, so July 27th through 30th. We heard from a lot of people that they really want to start rubbing shoulders again, so it's going to be a fully in-person symposium this year, and it's going to be at the Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy, Utah. You can get your tickets at sunstone.org/registration. Today's episode is entitled A Native Perspective on Pioneer Day by Forrest Kutch. Forrest Kutch is an enrolled member of the Ute Indian Tribe. He was the executive director for the Utah Division of Indian Affairs for 13 years. He also published a history of Utah's American Indians through Utah State University Press. This session was recorded at the 2018 Sunstone Summer Symposium.
I was going to read the creation story out of this book, A History of Utah's American Indian People. I highly recommend this. It's under my name. I told them I'm not the author. They said, well, you coordinated the project. My friends and colleagues in the Division of History said you're the author. So I said, all right. I'm not going to read from the book. It's too long. I'm just going to paraphrase the legend. The legend goes this way. God, creator, manifested himself as a wolf, a wise wolf, and the Utes called him Sanawav. And Sanawav, one day, he had a leather pouch. He had an idea. And what he started doing is picking branches off the trees, and he was breaking them in even sections. And so he had a whole couple handfuls of the sticks, and he put them in the pouch. And then he remembered he had forgotten something that he had to do. So he put the pouch down, and he stepped away to take care of that errand. As soon as he got a little ways away, Coyote emerged. And Coyote had been watching Sanawav. And so he was curious and wanted to know what was in the bag. So he goes creeping up there and looks around. He opens up the bag, and all of a sudden people start pouring out of the bag. And they start talking different languages, and they start feuding with one another in the process. And they scatter in different directions. By this time, Coyote realized he'd messed up big time. So he turns around and hightails out of there. So a little later, Sanawav comes back, and he sees the bag, and he says, oh, I should have known that Wile E. Coyote would come and mess things up. And sure enough, so he went over and got the bag, and he opened it and looked inside, and there was still one little group of people in there. And he said, oh, you people are going to be blessed, and you will be able to defeat the rest. And so this is where I'll put you. That's the creation story of the Ute, Paiute. And then even the Comanches, some of the others have one similar to that. Because we are all part of a great nation that just broke off at different times. My interpretation of the creation story is this. That my people, the Utes, are chosen people too. Furthermore, this land is our promised land. And we were here not one, two, but thousands, possibly 10,000 plus years before the settlers ever arrived here. Now, I will say this, that the Salt Lake Valley here was kind of a buffer zone between my people, the Utes, which were in Utah Valley, and the Shoshone to the north, and the Goshute to the west. But it didn't mean that we did not come and frequent this area. My people grazed their horses on the bench here. Our people, our homeland is Utah Valley. Governor Herbert, he hated when I would say that. And, But what he needed to understand is that, you know, when you don't have any landmark in Utah Valley, that says something. That's why I fought really hard to keep the Ute name associated with the University of Utah. And I know about the psychological impact, emotional impact that a logo might have, but there wasn't a logo caricature. There wasn't a character. It was a drum and feather. So people said, well, those sacred things. Well, a lot of things are sacred. But here's the point. My point is this. It's also very painful to be invisible and ignored in your own homeland. And so I said, the Ute name must remain, because once we lose it, we lose our landmark or our identity to this area, our homelands. And so I fought hard. I ran a petition, and I forget how many signatures we got, thousands of signatures. And so we won that argument. And there was a lot of jealousy, too, from the other tribes, certain tribes, including the historical enemies of the Utes. The stoic and renowned Catholic nun and saint, Mother Teresa, once said, "If you still remember suffering, then you have not healed." When it comes to Native people, I dare say we have not healed. We have not healed because the stories have not been told, neither completely nor accurately. Pioneer Day conjures up many things in the mind of this Utah Native person. The first thing that pops up is pain, humiliation, and trauma. Painful memories and emotional trauma that occurs as a result of the often violent clash of the cultures that took place in the past. Pioneer Day resembles a military parade, the victorious celebration of the conqueror. According to Peter Godfredson, he wrote Indian Depredations way back and published 1917. And he documented these conflicts. And it's a book, very, very dark, challenging book to read, very painful book to read. He said there was even a time when sham battles were a frequent event during Pioneer Day. These actions were clearly designed to depict the glory and victory of the Mormon settlers over despised heathen Ute savages. I quote, "Their red bodies shone and glistened in the sun. They must have been greased. They danced above the ridge, waving the scalp of poor Tindril and scouting their terrible war cry. The thrilling effect is felt when imitated in our sham battle in the celebration of the 24th of July." And I think some of you probably recall there was a community up north that was celebrating the sham battle also, and it made front pages of the Tribune. The Shoshone, Northwest Band Shoshone complained about it. It was outdated, it was insulting, and so they discontinued it. In some ways, very little has changed. Again, the reason it hasn't changed is because the truth has not come forth. And it's not properly taught in schools. We're hoping that it will just go away and vanish or be swept under the rug. It won't. As long as there's an Indian in the state, as long as there's one, there's always going to be that enigma, that unfinished business. No one's perfect. We're not perfect either. I mean, one band of the Utes, not all the Utes, but one band under Wakar, more appropriately pronounced Wukuru or somewhere along that line, not Walker. English does not do justice to native languages, but my point is this, that he was a slave trader, okay? He was cruel. He was like Columbus. He was a renegade, cruel leader. He was more of a war chief renegade. The older, wiser chiefs, they only respected his prowess. They had to. He was very aggressive. He valued horses over human lives, and he traded. He would raid Paiutes, Goshutes, Navajo communities, and raid the women and children and take them, and he would take them and trade them to the Spanish for horses. for goods. He was a cruel man. That doesn't make me feel good about my heritage. But it's the truth, and I've got to tell it like it is. Same way you got to tell it like it is too. If you want to be free, that's what you got to do. I think I've always struggled with the Pioneer Celebration, not so much that it has merit in recognizing only the suffering and glory of the Mormon settlers, but with the underlying concept of being first, denial of Native people's presence or existence is very painful. The idea of someone being first sounds like a new beginning, a fresh start, which is the whole glorification of settler colonialism. And the idea of innocence that people of European descent attach to white, well, the story makes it seem like there was a new, brand new beginning, like history started at that moment, but it didn't. There were other histories going on before that moment, the indigenous people's histories and the colonizers' histories, and they collided. This is from the book Inheritance by Christine Sleater. She's a pretty well-known multicultural educator on the West Coast. She discovered that her family acquired land from traditional Ute country in northwestern Colorado, where my father's people come from, the Yomparika. And after she learned about the history, and the land was left, she inherited it, she turned it back to the tribe. Last year, she was honored by the tribe. She met with the governing body, and she gave them the title to the land. I'm reminded of two myths that we were trying to dispel in this book. The first one was that there were no original inhabitants of the Salt Lake Valley and nearby vicinity. I've already shared with you that the Indian people always frequented this area. They hunted this area. Some spent summers or falls in this area. So it's not that we weren't inhabiting this area. It's that our homelands were more for the Utes to the south, the Shoshone, Davis County and beyond, and the Goshutes, more to the West Desert. But they would frequent this area quite often. The other one was that when the Indians were discovered, the Mormon settlers treated them better than the Gentiles or other neighboring Americans. To some extent, that's true. There were some isolated examples where some Mormon settlers were beyond fairness. They went out of their way to help Indian people. But there were also equally or more instances of cruelty and outright violence. Okay, if you read Indian Depredations by Gottfredson, you'll see. It's a very depressing, bloody book. It's a bloody history. They counted about at least 50 battles. There's another book coming out. I highly recommend it, but it's a very equally painful book. It's called The Whites Want Everything by Bagley and the late Dr. Floyd Emeritus Floyd O'Neill. Again, we've got to face the truth, folks. It's just the way it is. When it came to doing this book, I'm reminded of the monumental discussion I had with former Paiute chairwoman, the late Janelle Anderson, regarding the Mountain Meadows Massacre. It's very painful to me because when I was a kid, I was in junior high school, and I remember the teacher talking about this, and she said that the Indians were responsible for killing all the settlers, all 120. And luckily, the room was like this, and half were Indian students, half non-Indian kids. And we all kind of looked at each other, you know, in a new way. It was kind of, and luckily we had as many as they did, so it was kind of balanced things out. Oh, okay. But that did cross our minds, you know. It did. Well, you're the enemy. You know, how could you do this? Come on, face it, folks. We're all human beings, and we have these emotions. And we size each other up all the time. That happened in my classroom. It was very painful because in junior high school, I had good non-Indian friends. And it hurt me to, you know, look at my buddy across the way and have him wondering about me. And so It wasn't until I was director of Internet Affairs when this issue began to evolve. And it did evolve. While editing this book, I discovered the Paiute history had omitted Mountain Meadows Massacre. So I called Janelle. I said, Madam Chairwoman, why have you omitted the Mountain Meadows Massacre? She said, Forrest, we are afraid. We're afraid of any repercussions or retaliation that might occur from the LDS Church. And she was a member of the church herself. So there is, being a patriarchal church, there's a pecking order, and she was afraid of that. And I told her, I said, don't be afraid. This is a state-funded project. The legislature of the state of Utah has authorized this, and she need not be afraid. You need not be afraid of this. So she contacted her people and put it back in. Their version is they had no participation, at least no official participation. Now, Will, in his books, and I respect his scholarship, documents that there were some Paiutes who led a frontal attack. But after a few of them were wounded, they wandered off, okay? But they did not plan the attack. They did not conspire. They were not part of the plan. According to Shoshone lore, however, there were possibly two renegades who were part of Pocatello's band, and they had been raiding wagon trains up north and overland stagecoaches and mail, and they were hiding out in the Cedar City area. When it comes to the Bear River Massacre, California militia, when they came into this area, Colonel Patrick Connor, they headed straight for the Shoshone camps because of those raids, and they attacked the first innocent settlement, Bear River, and killed. The books say 250, some say 300. I have an eyewitness account that's documented in Special Collections, Brigham Young University, of a count by a man. He counted them twice. 493 would make it the largest massacre in the western United States, bigger than Sand Creek and bigger than Wounded Knee. You ever heard of trauma, the term trauma? It's being used a lot these days. Well, the history of it is that it came about as a result of studying the Jewish people who suffered from the Holocaust. A lot of psychiatrists and social workers were noticing that a lot of Jewish people were suffering emotional trauma, a lot of social and familial dysfunction, alcoholism, addictions, incest, sexual abuse, things like this. And they were wondering what's causing all of this. And so they studied those people and discovered that they were carrying a lot of trauma inside. You can define trauma many ways, okay? You can call it damage to the psyche. You can say, well, it's emotional stress that's built up, scarred the person. You can have all kinds of explanations for it. But mine is this. It's dark energy. It's evil spirit that's inside a person. And it's for them to heal, they've got to purge it. They've got to get it out, release it. And there's many ways to do it. There's no one way to do it. But that's just my definition, based on my life experience. Can contribute to confusion, identity loss, identity crisis, shame, rejection, no social acceptance, low self-esteem, self-hate, destructive behavior, hatred of the other races, consequences, stress brought on by all the above. So trauma is real, and we all carry some of it. The spiritual people, the shamans say, and also the psychologists recently say, as much as 80% is passed down from generation to generation. And we generate 10 to 20% of it on our own, with our own mistakes in life. This trauma is what we have to deal with too, but so do you all. And it's killing us. If we face the truth, we can purge it out In many ways, Utah as a state and theocracy has not grown up yet. What I mean is it has not reconciled its past. It continues to lie about it, skew the truth, and sweep it under the rug. According to Dan McCool, retired U of U, University of Utah political science professor, visitors to the downtown LDS temple are still told that no Indian people occupied the Salt Lake Valley prior to Mormon settlement. There are several accounts in which the Mormon account of or version of violence conflicts with the forensic evidence. Mountain Meadows was one of them. The original Mormon version is that the Indians and members of the Mormon militia attacked the innocent wagon train victims. It was once alleged that the Indians killed the women and children with blunt objects, sticks and stones, and the brave militiamen killed the adult settlers. And that was what I was told when I was in junior high school. It hurt like heck. It was made us look like wimps, and horrible wimps at that. Brigham Young was not implicated. The most recent revised version is that 60 members of the Mormon militia did most of the killing. And I already mentioned where Bagley mentioned some of the Paiutes who were part of the frontal assault. And I mentioned the Shoshone lore. According to descendants of the survivors, some of the militiamen were dressed as Indians. And contrary to the above claims, most of the deceased were killed execution style or shot at the base of the skull. This was discovered in 99. They were going to build a new monument in that area, and when they did, they disturbed human remains. State law and federal law requires that those remains be examined, an archaeological assessment conducted. And so the woman that examined them is a member of the church, and she was shocked to see that so many of them were shot at the base of the skull. It kind of entered government, because at one point, after this was discovered, word was going around. Governor Levitch sent up some pickups to load up the human remains and have them reburied. I remember Kevin Jones, he went up there and complained. He said that we have not completed the analysis of the remains, and he was told to keep quiet. You see how history can become awfully painful and personal? But it's painful on both sides, and we need to deal with it. We need to accept it. We're all capable of violence. We're all capable of ugly things. It's part of our human nature. We're also capable of wonderful, beautiful things, too. I find history to be very intriguing, because it does touch you personally. And the more you learn about it, the more you discover your own humanity. The other one was the Nephi executions, which occurred October 2nd, 1883, during the Walker War. The Mormon version is that seven Native Americans were killed in a skirmish with the militia members at Nephi. Native Americans were the aggressors, and the militia members were defending themselves and thus defending their settlement and families. Peter Godfrey's version of the above is that on Monday, March 12, 1866, General Warren S. Snow of Manti arrested some Indians at a camp a couple of miles northeast of Nephi in Juab County. One Indian tried to escape and was shot down. Four others were tried in court, and by order of the chief was taken out of town and shot for complicity in several raids. Eight others, including Chief Sandpitch, were taken to Manti and placed in jail. Contrary to the above, a recent and very thorough archaeological investigation conducted by colleague Ronald Rood and some other people revealed that there were seven victims, all executed and shot at the base of the skull. I believe they were of Ute origin. Circleville Massacre was another one. Mormon version via Gottfriedson is that on April 21, 1866, an express arrived at Circleville informing settlers of an attack by Paiutes who killed two white men at Fort Sanford. The settlers decided to round up all the Paiutes and place them under guard. One resisted and was shot. The others were placed under guard. Then, the following evening, some tried to escape, and they were all killed off, with the exception of children. Numbers not given. The Indian oral version is that the Paiutes were invited to a feast, and after they were all assembled, they were shot to death. Every last one of them. So I'm just giving you some examples in which the accounts of the settlers and the Indian version and the anthropological versions clash. And so you have to look at all those things, okay? And some of it is hard to swallow. And I mentioned about the creation story about my people. They were small in number. When they acquired the horse, they became very valiant. Their name, Ute, came from the Spanish. They always, they were very stubborn. They fought the Spanish. They fought Mormon settlers. The Spanish called them Guasatas, and that eventually evolved into Utes. And so Brigham Young, when he heard that, he started referring to us as Utes, and then now we cut it off to Utes. But we're actually Shoshonean people. In so many ways, the Utes were spoilers, always spoiling the plans of innocence and perfection. After all, chosen people are supposed to be perfect in every way. Things are supposed to appear that they can do no wrong. They, the Utes, were not supposed to be here, but they were. They were supposed to join the church and change their ways, and they did not. Further, they did not become white. They were supposed to quietly give up their land and go away. They did not. They were not supposed to resist, and they did to this day. They were not supposed to fight back, and they did. Brigham Young met with them to enlist them in the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Basically, I got a qualification there from Will that it was to join them against the Americats, against the U.S. government, and they refused. They were supposed to quietly move onto reservations, and they did not. They were supposed to become Mormons and integrate. They did not. And if they did not convert, they were to become extinct. They live on. They were supposed to cooperate in every way, and they never did. More recently, the Utes are supposed to deny their identity and heritage. On the contrary, they strongly value and defend their native heritage. The Utes are not supposed to resist state encroachment of their lands and resources. The Utes have successfully filed lawsuits in the courts to protect their resources. The Utes are not supposed to network or coalition with other tribes, nations, to protect their interests. They have. Bears Ears Coalition is an example. Their membership in the National Congress of American Indians is another one. The Utes are not supposed to become indignant about and protective of their treatment of their dead ancestors. They are. They're supposed to fall in line and become conservative like their Mormon counterparts. They do not. Most of them are not Republican. Most of them are Democrats. Utes are supposed to be anti-federal government and join the Mormons in fighting against federal overreach. Instead, the Utes fight to protect their sovereign rights, which are federal. A woman minister, Patty, who has talked to me about reconciliation. And in the end, what we've come to believe is that it's still a long time off. It will be quite some time before enlightenment will be achieved to the level necessary for reconciliation to occur among our people. But I stay open to that possibility nevertheless. People used to ask me when I was Director of Indian Affairs about how I felt about the belief, the Mormon belief that dark-skinned people are cursed. And I would say, well, I'm the color of the earth, and I don't particularly care to change my color. I prefer to remain brown, and I like it. Number two, I think my understanding of human nature is that if you teach a person, especially children, that they are less than others, and especially if they're cursed, only it's going to be a number of years before they'll destroy themselves. They will destroy. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to teach them negative propaganda. They're gonna die. They'll take their own lives. So I'm dead against teaching the cursed provision of the Book of Mormon. I think it's destructive. I think it needs to stop now.
So if Russell Nelson and Governor Herbert came to you and said, how can we make restitution? What would your dream plan for that look like?
First of all, I would call my colleague, Patty, and I would say, Patty, who else can we bring to the table and put our heads together and pull this together. And we'll have representatives of the church, all the churches, and the governor as well. And let's just, the one thing I will say, I believe in staying at the table, the dialogue. And you don't come up with a plan immediately. It takes time. You have to have patience. But you have to stay at the table, and sooner or later, a plan will be formulated. And it will be a good one. And it might not even work the first time. It might not even work. But we stay at the table till it does. You have to understand your ancestors had a reason for why they felt and acted the way they did. And so it's important for you to understand them and understand that we're all human beings, contrary to popular belief. It's just that when that dark energy entered us, sometimes it can skew the person. You see what I'm saying? I have learned more and more about evil in the later years of my life, to the point where when someone does something terrible, I try to separate the person from the darkness. And it's hard. Sometimes I really hate that person, especially if they harm children. Sexual abuse of children just really angers me. But it's like, here's one thing I know. Usually, 9 times out of 10, that person was abused. So it's this trauma is intergenerational, and it gets carried down. You see what I'm saying? So I guess what I'm saying to you is it's important for you to understand the trauma of your ancestors and then understand the trauma of the native people. Do not participate in the continued oppression, because some of this is still going on today. And the thing is, what the governor and his people don't understand, the legislature, those policies of development at all cost, they're not just dealing with us. They're dealing with nature and the Lord. If you start destroying the earth, you become an enemy of God. And you don't want to push too hard. So a lot of times I temper my anger by saying, well, you know, sooner or later, nature's going to deal with you. I don't have to, you know, be the tough guy to do that. I just say, yeah, I know, yeah, you're big and strong. You have all the power and numbers and money and all that stuff and everything. But you know what? I don't fear you, because I know the Lord's going to come after you one day. Mother Nature. Look at the weather patterns we're getting these days. Look at the fires. It's happening now. The floods. You know, not only back east, it's flooding in southern Utah. I mean, it's happening right now. And you know what it is? Without getting religious, it's a spiritual war. The Indian version of it, the native version, comes from the Mayan people. My friend, his name is Francisco Pak. And Francisco told me the correct interpretation of 2012 is this. He said it did not represent the end of the world. It represented a shift of energy from the male to the female. It's the beginning of the female age. And he said there's going to be a dangerous period of 54 years from 2012. And the male energy is going to sense that it's lost its base. And it will react violently. And that's what is happening right now. That's why you have extreme behavior in certain men. Trump, the governor, legislature, people in the South are getting crazy. Since immigration has become a recent national issue, I wish to leave with these comments. According to Shoshone lore, the Utes were immigrants, ancestors of the ancient Chittimic dog people. Mormons were immigrants too, but for perhaps different reasons. Illegally moved to another country under the control of another country. I believe this area was property of Mexico. They didn't speak the language of the country they migrated to. Afraid for the safety of their families and freedom in their home country, arrived with no papers or documents and only the things they could carry by hand or court, religious, hardworking, and only wanting new opportunities, celebrated as pioneers of freedom and liberty, whereas Mexicans and other Central and South Americans qualify for all the above equally, but are demonized, locked in cages, and deported, even though they are only seeking asylum. I consider seeking asylum a human right, and we have an obligation to help them, especially if we consider ourselves followers of Jesus Christ, who I am. Thank you.